Welcome back to the Deep Dive. If you need that shortcut to really understand the Southeast Asian digital economy, beyond the headlines, getting into the crucial shifts in making money and the tech disruption, well, you're in the right place. We're kicking off today with a number that honestly sets the stage for everything. Southeast Asia's digital economy, it's rocketing towards surpassing $300 billion in gross merchandise value in 2025. Just think
Yeah,
about that scale.
it's huge. And yeah, the insight here comes straight from the source material, the latest Google, Temasek, and Bain Economy CA 2025 research. What's really important about this latest report is the scope. They broadened it out,
Right.
beyond the usual big six markets. Now it covers all 10 countries of ASEAN.
ASEAN, right. And why is that expansion to all 10 countries, ASEAN 10, so important for us?
Well, because getting all 10 nations in there gives us the full picture. It's not just the mature markets like Singapore or Indonesia anymore. It now includes those, well, more fragmented emerging markets too. And frankly, they're the ones really driving the future growth trajectory. It shows a market that's maturing at both ends.
Exactly. And our mission today, especially for you, the professional needing that focused update, is to pull out the clearest, most useful insights. We're zooming in on two really critical sectors, food delivery and transport. We're looking squarely at profitability, the tech disruption that's happening, and the strategies these platforms are actually using to keep that huge scale growing, but sustainably this time.
And sustainable growth is the key phrase, definitely. Before we dive deep, the overall digital economy
Yeah.
still growing strong, about 15% year over year. And this isn't just because more people are getting online, though that's part of it. It's really fueled by smarter, much more, let's say, disciplined ways the platforms are making money. They're figuring it out.
Okay, right. Let's unpack this then, starting with food delivery. For years, this was like the poster child for growth at all costs, right? Companies are just burning cash on subsidies to grab users. But the big headline now that the sector is actually nearing profitability. How on earth did they pull off that pivot from cash bonfire to, well, something sustainable?
Yeah, the strategic shift was basically repositioning the whole service. They managed to move it away from being like a discretionary luxury, something you maybe did once a week,
Yeah.
to making it an affordable, routine, almost everyday option. And you see it in the numbers. GMV is still climbing steadily, projected to hit $23 billion across CUN 10 in 2025. But the real proof, the real sign of discipline, it's the revenue growth rate. That hit an incredible 33% year over year in the 2023-2024 period.
Wow. Okay, 33%. That doesn't just happen by, fiddling with delivery fees. What specific new things are they doing to get that kind of monetization? It can't just be higher commissions, surely. Merchants hate that.
No, exactly. It's diversification. Looking beyond just that core delivery fee, we're seeing platforms really aggressively build out these adjacent revenue streams. Like they report high double-digit growth in advertising revenue. Smaller vendors, the long tail, they're realizing, hey, I can pay to promote my menu in the app and actually get results. Then you've got loyalty subscriptions becoming bigger. That locks users in, gives predictable income, and of course, they're optimizing their own cloud kitchens.
But the really interesting pivot, the thing that really jumps out from the research, is this move beyond just the logistics part. They're actually trying to capture value from people dining in restaurants. They're moving off the street, so to speak, and into the dining room itself. Why that move? How does that drive profitability?
This is where it gets really clever. It's a multi-sided strategy. So for consumers, the benefit is obvious. Savings, often 10%, maybe up to 30% off the total bill. Plus, convenience. Think about it. You
Yeah.
can use one app for discovery, finding the place, maybe getting transport there, and then paying inside the restaurant. It pulls the whole experience together.
Okay, that makes sense for me as a customer. But why is it such a game changer for the platforms and, crucially, the restaurants themselves?
Right. For the merchants, the restaurants, it tackles a huge financial headache. Delivery commissions, they usually cost them, what, 20, 25% of the order value?
Yeah.
That eats margins. But if they use the platform to promote dine-in offers, they get a cheap marketing channel to bring people through the door. And that foot traffic leads to high margin sales inside the restaurant, much better than paying that hefty delivery cut.
Got it. So the platform isn't just making money on the delivery anymore. It's making money by helping the restaurant get and keep customers in the first place.
Precisely. And for the platforms, this massively boosts app usage, makes users stickier, as they say. It expands their slice of your total food budget, covering delivery, pickup, and dining out now. All of this pumps up what we call CLV, customer lifetime value. How much is that user worth over time? It's a much more holistic way to monetize the whole food journey, not just that last bit of delivery.
Okay, that really clarifies the path to profit in food delivery. It's about diversifying and grabbing that high margin dine-in piece. Right, let's shift gears then. Let's talk transport. While food delivery is optimizing the meal, transport seems to be grappling with optimizing the vehicle itself. The GMV here, slightly smaller, yes, projected at $11.5 billion in CN10 for 2025, but growing strongly too, 16% year over year. What are the core profitability strategies we're seeing for the ride-hailing players?
Well, it's a similar playbook, really. Diversification and discipline. You see tiered services, different options for the mass market versus premium users who pay more. They're also pushing subscription bundles. Get people using the service more frequently, lock them in. And just like food delivery, they're bringing in-app ads as another revenue stream. It works. But honestly, the single biggest driver for profit has been cutting back.
Yeah.
Specifically, reducing those deep, deep discounts and promotions for riders, spending less.
Right, less burning cash on incentives. Now, what really stands out in the research for transport's future isn't just ride-hailing optimization, it's the huge tech disruption looming.
Yeah.
Electric and autonomous vehicles. What's the real story on EV adoption in Southeast Asia right now? Is it actually happening?
Oh, it's accelerating quite quickly, in fact, especially for two-wheelers, motorcycles, scooters. Given the region's economics and infrastructure, two-wheelers are really the entry point for EVs. They're everywhere, right? And their shorter travel distances mean battery range isn't quite the deal breaker it can be for cars.
And it sounds like platforms and governments are both pushing this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Government support is pretty strong in places. Vietnam, for example, they've got policies like subsidies for converting, I think it's 20,000 two-wheelers in Ho Chi Minh City. Plus, and this is big, they're planning a ban on new fossil fuel models in Hanoi's central business district starting July 2026. That forces the issue. Indonesia is also pushing hard. Incentives for electric two-wheelers, encouraging local EV production. So yeah, momentum is building from the top, and the mobility platforms are definitely jumping on it.
Okay, EVs are starting to gain ground, especially two-wheelers. Now, let's tackle the really big one, autonomous vehicles. AVs, in a region famous for, let's be honest, chaotic traffic. Are we talking science fiction here, or is this disruption actually near term, like 5 minutes away or 5 years away?
Huh, good question. It is near term, but incredibly complex, just as you hinted. There are already ongoing AV pilots happening now in six countries across sea, actually.
Yeah.
And the economic models, they're pretty compelling. The research suggests that robotaxis could potentially significantly outperform human drivers on cost within the next 3 to 5 years.
3 to 5 years. That feels aggressive. What's driving that projected cost advantage so quickly?
It seems to be two main things. First, falling manufacturing costs, especially with tech coming out of China. That lowers the initial price tag for each vehicle. Second is the potential for much, much better vehicle utilization. An AV doesn't need brakes, doesn't sleep. It can operate more hours per day, which drives down the cost per kilometer compared to a human driver who needs rest. But, and this is really important, but why is AV adoption maybe uniquely challenging in Southeast Asia, even with that economic potential?
Yeah, the local situation must make the ROI tricky.
Exactly. You've got this very high upfront cost for the AI tech, the sensors, everything, and you're comparing that cost against the region's relatively low labor costs for human drivers. In places where human labor is cheap and plentiful, it's just harder for expensive tech to win purely on cost, at least initially. And then there are the regulators. They're understandably very cautious. They know how many people rely on driving for these platforms for employment, so there's a big economic sensitivity there too.
Okay, so if the tech is pricey and the labor is cheap, how does the research suggest AVs will actually enter this market? They can't just flip a switch without causing chaos, right?
No, it points towards partnerships, deep strategic alliances. AV companies really need to team up with the local mobility platforms. Why? Because the local guys bring that crucial understanding of the local context, traffic patterns that are totally different from where U.S. or European AVs are usually trained. They know the ground truth. Local partners also help figure out the operating models, maybe mixing AVs and human drivers at first. And they can help manage the financing for these expensive vehicles. It won't be a simple tech takeover. It'll have to be deeply integrated.
Okay, let's try to wrap this up for you listening. To quickly summarize our deep dive today, in the professional sphere, transport and food delivery in Southeast Asia are definitely maturing. They're focused hard on profitability now, using smart adjacent revenues, think dine-in services and app ads. But at the same time, both sectors, especially transport, are staring down massive, unavoidable tech disruption from EVs and particularly autonomous vehicles.
Yeah, and the common thread we see across both, it's the absolute power of local context. Success isn't just about having the newest tech or service. It's about mastering the local labor economics, navigating those really fragmented regulations across all of the CION, and crucially, building consumer trust, especially as these platforms push further into things like AI decision making and even financial services. Local nuance is everything.
Right. So here's a final provocative thought for you to chew on. If the pure economics of robo-taxis are projected to beat human drivers within just 3 to 5 years, that's a blink of an eye. Really, how fast will regulators across CION act? Knowing that millions of jobs could be affected very quickly, will they choose to embrace this inevitable technology, or will they actively try to slow it down? That regulatory decision, that feels like the real wild card for the region's next decade of growth.